Chapter 19. 2 months more brought the year nearly to a close, and found Nicholas Long tenant of a spacious house in the market town nearest to Froom Everard. A man of means, genial character, and a bachelor, he was an object of great interest to his neighbors, and to his neighbors' wives and daughters. But he took little note of this, and had made it his business to go twice a week, no matter what the weather, to the now farmhouse at Froom Everard, a wing of which had been retained as the refuge of Christine. He always walked, to give no trouble in putting up a horse to a housekeeper whose staff was limited. The two had put their heads together on the situation, had gone to a solicitor, had balanced possibilities, and had resolved to make the plunge of matrimony. "Nothing venture, nothing have," apostrophe Christine had said, with some of her old audacity. With almost gratuitous honesty they had let their intentions be widely known. Christine, it is true, had rather shrunk from publicity at first, but Nicholas argued that their boldness in this respect would have good results. With his friends he held that there was not the slightest probability of her being other than a widow, and a challenge to the missing man now, followed by no response, would stultify any unpleasant remarks which might be thrown at her after their union. To this end a paragraph was inserted in the Wessex papers, announcing that their marriage was proposed to be celebrated on such and such a day in December. His periodic walks along the south side of the valley, to visit her were among the happiest experiences of his life. The yellow leaves falling around him in the foreground, the well-watered meads on the left hand, and the woman he loved awaiting him at the back of the scene, promised a future of much serenity, as far as human judgment could foresee. On arriving, he would sit with her in the parlor of the wing she retained, her general sitting room, where the only relics of her early surroundings were an old clock from the other end of the house, and her own piano. Before it was quite dark they would stand, hand in hand, looking out of the window across the flat turf to the dark clump of trees which hid further view from their eyes. "Do you wish you were still mistress here, dear?" apostrophe apostrophe he once said. "Not at all," apostrophe said she cheerfully. "I have a good enough room, and a good enough fire, and a good enough friend. Besides, my latter days as mistress of the house were not happy ones, and they spoiled the place for me. It was a punishment for my faithlessness. Nick, you do forgive me? Really you do?" Apostrophe, the 23rd of December, the eve of the wedding day, had arrived at last in the train of such uneventful ones as these. Nicholas had arranged to visit her that day a little later than usual, and see that everything was ready with her for the morrow's event and her removal to his house, for he had begun to look after her domestic affairs, and to lighten as much as possible the duties of her housekeeping. He was to come to an early supper, which as he had arranged to take the place of a wedding breakfast next day, the latter not being feasible in her present situation. An hour or so after dark the wife of the farmer who lived in the other part of the house entered Christine's parlor to lay the cloth. What with getting the ham skinned, and the black puddings hotted up, apostrophe she said, "It will take me all my time before he's here, if I begin this minute. Apostrophe apostrophe, I'll lay the table myself," apostrophe said Christine, jumping up. "Do you attend to the cooking?" Apostrophe apostrophe, "Thank you, ma'am. And perhaps 'tis no matter, seeing that it is the last night you'll have to do such work. I knew this sort of life wouldn't last long for 'ee, being born to better things." Apostrophe apostrophe, "It has lasted rather long, Mrs. Wake. And if he had not found me out it would have lasted all my days." Apostrophe apostrophe, "But he did find you out." Apostrophe apostrophe, "He did. And I'll lay the cloth immediately." Apostrophe, Mrs. Wake went back to the kitchen, and Christine began to bustle about. She greatly enjoyed preparing this table for Nicholas and herself with her own hands. She took artistic pleasure in adjusting each article to its position, as if half an inch error were a point of high importance. Finally she placed the two candles where they were to stand, and sat down by the fire. Mrs. Wake re-entered, and regarded the effect. "Why not have another candle or two, ma'am?" she said. "'Twon't make it livelier. Say four." "Very well," said Christine, and four candles were lighted. "Really," she added, surveying them, "I have been now so long accustomed to little economies, that they look quite extravagant." "You'll soon think nothing of 40 in his grand new house. Shall I bring in supper directly he comes, ma'am?" "No, not for half an hour. And, Mrs. Wake, you and Betsy are busy in the kitchen, I know, so when he knocks don't disturb yourselves. I can let him in." She was again left alone, and, as it still wanted some time to Nicholas's appointment, she stood by the fire, looking at herself in the glass over the mantel. Reflectively raising a lock of her hair just above her temple, she uncovered a small scar. That scar had a history. The terrible temper of her late husband, those sudden moods of irascibility which had made even his friendly excitements look like anger, had once caused him to set that mark upon her with the bezel of a ring he wore. He declared that the whole thing was an accident. She was a woman, and kept her own opinion. Christine then turned her back to the glass, and scanned the table and the candles, shining one at each corner like types of the four evangelists, and thought they looked too assuming, too confident. She glanced up at the clock, which stood also in this room, there not being space enough for it in the passage. It was nearly 7, and she expected Nicholas at 7:30. She liked the company of this venerable article in her lonely life. Its tickings and whizzings were a sort of conversation. It now began to strike the hour. At the end something grated slightly. Then, without any warning, the clock slowly inclined forward, and fell at full length upon the floor. The crash brought the farmer's wife rushing into the room. Christine had well nigh sprung out of her shoes. Mrs. Wake's inquiry what had happened was answered by the evidence of her own eyes. "How did it occur?" she said. "I cannot say. It was not firmly fixed, I suppose. Dear me, how sorry I am. My dear father's hall clock. And now I suppose it is ruined." Assisted by Mrs. Wake, she lifted the clock. Every inch of glass was, of course, shattered, but very little harm besides appeared to be done. They propped it up temporarily, though it would not go again. Christine had soon recovered her composure, but she saw that Mrs. Wake was gloomy. "What does it mean, Mrs. Wake?" she said. "Is it ominous?" "It is a sign of a violent death in the family." "Don't talk of it. I don't believe such things, and don't mention it to Mr. Long when he comes. He's not in the family yet, you know." "Oh no, it cannot refer to him," said Mrs. Wake musingly. "Some remote cousin, perhaps," observed Christine, no less willing to humor her than to get rid of a shapeless dread which the incident had caused in her own mind. "And supper is almost ready, Mrs. Wake?" "In 3/4 of an hour. Mrs. Wake left the room, and Christine sat on. Though it still wanted 15 minutes to the hour at which Nicholas had promised to be there, she began to grow impatient. After the accustomed ticking, the dead silence was oppressive. But she had not to wait so long as she had expected. Steps were heard approaching the door, and there was a knock. Christine was already there to open it. The entrance had no lamp, but it was not particularly dark out of doors. She could see the outline of a man, and cried cheerfully, "You are early. It is very good of you." "I beg pardon. It is not Mr. Belston himself, only a messenger with his bag and greatcoat. But he will be here soon." The voice was not the voice of Nicholas, and the intelligence was strange. I don't understand. Mr. Bilston? Apostrophe she faintly replied. Yes, ma'am. A gentleman, a stranger to me, gave me these things at Casterbridge Station to bring on here, and told me to say that Mr. Bilston had arrived there, and is detained for half an hour, but will be here in the course of the evening. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she sank into a chair. The porter put a small battered portmanteau on the floor, the coat on a chair, and looking into the room at the spread table said, if you are disappointed, ma'am, that your husband, as I suppose he is not come, I can assure you he'll soon be here. He stopped to get a shave, to my thinking, seeing he wanted it. What he said was that I could tell you he had heard the news in Ireland, and would have come sooner, his hand being forced, but was hindered crossing by the weather, having took passage in a sailing vessel. What news he meant he didn't say. Apostrophe, ah, yes, apostrophe she faltered. It was plain that the man knew nothing of her intended remarriage. Mechanically rising and giving him a shilling, she answered to his good night, apostrophe, and he withdrew, the beat of his footsteps lessening in the distance. She was alone, but in what a solitude. Christine stood in the middle of the hall, just as the man had left her, in the gloomy silence of the stopped clock within the adjoining room, till she aroused herself, and turning to the portmanteau and greatcoat brought them to the light of the candles, and examined them. The portmanteau bore painted upon it the initials J. B. apostrophe in white letters, the well-known initials of her husband. She examined the greatcoat. In the breast pocket was an empty spirit flask, which she firmly fancied she recognized as the one she had filled many times for him, when he was living at home with her. She turned desultorily hither and thither, until she heard another tread without, and there came a second knocking at the door. She did not respond to it, and Nicholas, for it was he, thinking that he was not heard by reason of a concentration on tomorrow's proceedings, opened the door softly, and came onto the door of her room, which stood unclosed, just as it had been left by the Casterbridge porter. Nicholas uttered a blithe greeting, cast his eye round the parlor, which with its tall candles, blazing fire, snow-white cloth, and prettily spread table, formed a cheerful spectacle enough for a man who had been walking in the dark for an hour. My bride almost, at last. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he cried, encircling her with his arms. Instead of responding, her figure became limp, frigid, heavy, her head fell back, and he found that as he had fainted. It was natural, he thought. As he had had many little worrying matters to attend to, and but slight assistance. He ought to have seen more effectually to her affairs. The closeness of the event had overexcited her. Nicholas kissed her unconscious face more than once, little thinking what news it was that had changed its aspect. Loth to call Mrs. Wake, he carried Christine to a couch, and laid her down. This had the effect of reviving her. Nicholas bent and whispered in her ear, lie quiet, dearest, no hurry, and dream, dream, dream of happy days. It is only one. You will soon be better. Apostrophe, he held her by the hand. No, no, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said, with a stare. Oh, how can this be? Apostrophe, Nicholas was alarmed and perplexed, but the disclosure was not long delayed. When as he had sat up, and by degrees, made the stunning event known to him, he stood as if transfixed. Ah, is it so? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said he. Then, becoming quite meek, and why was he so cruel, as to delay his return till now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she dutifully recited the explanation her husband had given her through the messenger, but her mechanical manner of telling it showed how much she doubted its truth. It was too unlikely that his arrival at such a dramatic moment should not be a contrived surprise, quite of a piece with his previous dealings towards her. But perhaps it may be true, and he may have become kind now, not as he used to be, apostrophe she faltered. Yes, perhaps, Nicholas, he is an altered man, we'll hope he is. I suppose I ought not to have listened to my legal advisors, and assumed his death so surely. Anyhow, I am roughly received back into the right way. ". Nicholas burst out bitterly. Oh, what two honest fools we were. To so court daylight upon our intention by putting that announcement in the papers. Why could we not have married privately, and gone away, so that he would never have known what had become of you, even if he had returned? Christine, he has done it too. But I'll say no more. Of course we might fly now. No, we might not, said S. he hastily. Very well. But this is hard to bear. Then I looked for good, then evil came unto me, and when I waited for light there came darkness. So once said a sorely tried man in the land of Uz, and so say I now. I wonder if he is almost here at this moment? She told him she supposed Bilston was approaching by the path across the fields, having sent on his great coat, which he would not want walking. And is this meal late for him, or for me? It was late for you. And it will be eaten by him? Yes. Christine, are you sure that he has come, or have you been sleeping over the fire and dreaming it? She pointed anew to the portmanteau with the initials JB, and to the coat beside it. Well, goodbye. Curse that parson for not marrying us 15 years ago. It is unnecessary to dwell further upon that parting. There are scenes wherein the words spoken do not even approximate to the level of the mental communion between the actors. Suffice it to say that part they did, and quickly, and Nicholas, more dead than alive, went out of the house homewards. Why had he ever come back? During his absence he had not cared for. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.